From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It was a late-night conversation with a friend that led to Melissa Leilani Larson's play. It's one of those casual chat sessions where you ask yourselves what-if questions. And this is the question that got her thinking. What would it take for you to leave Mormonism? Like, what's your breaking point? For Larson, it was an easy answer: polygamy. If the LDS Church returned to polygamy, she told her friend, she would be out of there. So Larson's play is built on that supposition. An active Mormon couple are called by their leaders to help the church reinstate plural marriage. They tell the couple it's a pilot program. That's the name of the play, The Pilot Program. It's the latest production of the Plan B Theater Company. And today on our program, we're talking about it after the news.
I am Cammie Terry Paul. I live in Cedar City, Utah, and I work at the Utah Shakespeare Festival. Radio West is one of my favorite shows. I feel like the discussions are always intelligent. I always learn about more about a topic than I ever would have thought existed about the topic. I've really enjoyed discussions that they have about issues that are controversial, especially that I feel like they are respectful, and I get to hear different perspectives, and I really enjoy that handling of things that are really important to me, and I think to lots of people around me.
It's KUER Spring Fun Drive. If Radio West is important to you, we hope you'll consider a gift to the station. You can become a sustaining member for as little as $10 a month. Go online to KUER.org to make your pledge. Thank you.
This is Radio West and Doug Fabrizio. So I think it'll be pretty easy to get people's attention for the latest production of the Plan B Theater Company. The play is called The Pilot Program, and it's also easy to set up. Here goes. A faithful Mormon couple is summoned to an interview with church officials, and they have a proposal for the couple. The LDS Church, they tell them, has decided to reinstate the principle of polygamy that they had abandoned in the 19th century, and they're asking certain couples to be part of the pilot program. It's a crazy premise, to be sure, but the play is only partly about the quote-unquote issues of polygamy. That's been done before a lot, really. Melissa Leilani Larson's play is a character study. The polygamy thing is just the supposition that helps her explore different things, like the boundaries of devotion, the depth of a relationship, what it means to be happy, and what it's like to be single in a culture so focused on being married. The pilot program opened last week in Salt Lake City. It runs through this weekend. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. We're talking about it today. You can join us if you have comments or questions. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Melissa Leilani Larson is a playwright based in Provo. Her plays have been produced in a number of places, at Brigham Young University, at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, several U.S. festivals. She's also a screenwriter, by the way, of the feature-length film Freetown, which is, you've probably heard of. It's currently showing around the country. Pilot Program is the second play in a trilogy that she's working on, and Pilot Program is Larson's Plan B Theater Company debut. And that was a long introduction. Melissa, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jerry Rapier is back with us. He, of course, is the director of the Pilot Program. This is his 15th season as Plan B Theater's producing director. And Jerry, welcome back to you.
Thanks.
Well, I think I've told the story in the introduction earlier about the thing that got you thinking about all of this. But just give me a sense of it again. So you and a friend are chatting at night and just kind of chit-chat, and the idea comes up.
The idea comes up. We were having what we liked to think at the time, you know, deep philosophical conversations. We would get together and muse about how much smarter we were than everyone else. And it was very late at night. It was probably 2 or 3 in the morning. And we were good friends. And we opened up to each other about a lot of things. And the question came up, what would it take to not be Mormon anymore? And my friend was uncomfortable with the question.
Why?
I think it's something, I don't know if some folks think if they answer it, it's going to come true in a sort of I don't know, mythical way.
Yeah.
But as someone who deals with characters a lot, and I force characters to answer those kind of questions and on stage and in front of people, and I thought it was only fair that I grapple with that question myself. And the answer to the question for me, as a single woman in a married culture, was polygamy. Because one of the...
But did you, like, answer right away, like, nope, this is easy. I've already thought about this. If polygamy, I'm done.
Not right away.
Yeah.
I mused on it. I think there were, there was some thought in it. I thought about a lot of other possibilities, I suppose.
Yeah.
But that was the one that struck home the hardest.
You know, it seems to me, and we'll talk about this a little bit later too, like for me, in some ways, polygamy is such a thing in the background almost, although not entirely, obviously. It's almost more about a single woman or single women to me. Is that right?
Well, I think that's why I connected to it, to the idea, and what frightens me about it, about the distant possibility that it would come back. This idea that because marriage is so important to being Mormon and to our faith and to how things work, that the hereafter is so clearly outlined and that marriage is part of that. And so if you're not married, is something wrong with you? I mean, that's a question I've asked myself for a very long time. I've come to a peace with that question. It doesn't bother me the way it did 10 years ago. But
it makes you think about it enough to work it into a play.
Yes. It never quite goes away.
Yeah.
And so the play helps me to work it out.
Yeah, of course. Jerry, what was the thing that interested you when you first – I don't know if you read the actual play or a concept of it.
Well, I'd been asking Mel to write for us for a couple of years, and she just wasn't sure how to find her way in. And then I invited her to be part of our Playwrights Lab, which meets monthly, and the playwrights share very raw versions of their work with each other and get feedback from people they trust. And it was December of 2013. Mel was working on this. It was very rough, and she hadn't really read anything about the decriminalization ruling of polygamy. So she's having this conversation with herself at the same time this conversation is happening in the media. And we were about 10 pages into the reading, and I thought, yeah, we're going to have to do this play because it's coming from such a truthful place. And it's dealing with something that people think is this outlandish possibility, but yeah. I just don't think it's that far-fetched to consider.
Really?
Yeah, I just, you know.
I think everyone – do you agree with him, Melissa?
If this was a horror movie, yes. I think it is very plausible, and when I try to play around with the play in the play is how plausible it could be. Yeah.
Huh, because I guess I just assume, no, this is just some nutty thing that, of course, this will never happen in. But it's a great way of raising questions about character development and the boundaries of faith and stuff like that. But that's
exactly.
Interesting. Wow, Jerry, you really think.
Well, I just think it's on the table. I think it's there's no legal barrier. So who knows what's coming down the pike?
You know, what's interesting, too, is there aren't really any dissenters in the bunch in this play. So why did that interest you? Not that we have to have a dissenter in the play for it to be a Plan B theater. Do you know what I mean? They're all
sure.
They're all believers.
I was a lot more interested, and we've talked a lot about this in the course of developing and working on and now staging the play, that it's more interesting to consider it as a question of faith.
Yeah.
A question of how much do you believe in what shapes your life and how do you navigate within that when you're unsure of if the boundaries will shift. And I think anybody, no matter what faith you belong to or if you are not a faith-based person or if you have grown up in a culture observing people or feeling trapped, whatever your faith story is, you can identify with having to make difficult decisions based on not only what you believe, but what you believe other people think about what you believe.
You're an active Latter-day Saint, Melissa.
Yes.
You've gone to Brigham Young University. You work for the church now.
Yes.
So does that make you nervous talking about it or even creating some of these images? Do you have your own kinds of boundaries? I mean, as a, I mean, it you know, there are a lot of expressions of, I wouldn't say doubt in here, but I mean, these are difficult issues. Do you feel you're on the edge here in any way?
I don't think so. I think there were times in the process of creating it that I felt that I might be. But I, to go along with what Jerry was saying, for me, it's actually asking questions is strengthens my faith and helps me to find, to keep grounded and to find what I need to find to keep going straight ahead. So doubt is necessary for faith to exist.
It's interesting that it doesn't take place 2015. It takes place in 2019. Why?
I wanted to have a little bit of space between now and when it happened. I didn't want it to be Back to the Future. I didn't want to deal with technology. But I wanted it to be a little bit, to give a little bit of breathing room between now and then because of the ruling, because of the legal situation, for things to settle in and for the possibility to rise, and pilot programs take a while to organize, I think. So maybe it took them 3.5 years to figure out what they were going
to
do.
In your notes to the play, you say that sometimes silence is everything. And I get a sense that there are moments of kind of unbearable awkwardness in these in these different scenes. This idea of silence, you kind of build that into the character of the play, it seems.
Yes. The actual draft, the pages, because usually when you're working on a play, you say there's a rule of thumb that a page of dialogue is about a minute to a minute and a half, and we have 64 pages, and that should play in just about an hour. And we're playing at, 78 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is silence and is awkwardness and is feeling things out. And that's something that Jerry and the actors have brought to it. That's really great. I wanted there to be room for that, and it's worked out really nicely.
Okay, so I want to Jerry, set this up for us. So it's pretty straightforward, as I said. I mean, it's an incredibly simple plot. They, as the play begins, Abigail and Jacob have just returned from church, where they've been asked to be a part of the pilot program.
Right. And they, speaking of the silence, there's just this almost insurmountable silence between them, because how do you even talk about this thing that you never thought would be presented to you, and not even just as an idea, but you're being called to serve. And you don't say no, usually, when you're called. You find a way to jump into the calling and make it your own. And so they're not what I would say your typical Mormon couple. They're intellectuals. Abby is a professor. They have a very different kind of relationship. They're very comfortable being the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it brings up the unspoken absence in their home as well.
Well, let's introduce the actors here, because I want to have them play a scene. Mark Fossen is with us. He plays Abigail's husband, Jacob. Mark and April are married. April Fossen plays Abigail, and Mark and April, welcome to you. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
For being with us. I want to hold off on the other character for just a minute, because I want to set this one up first. First, to this point, and which may seem strange because you're actors, big deal if you're Mormon or not, but you guys are not. And I'm wondering what that was like, not understanding some of the elements of this culture that maybe Melissa may have as you were creating the character. I mean, did you have a lot of questions about, wow, why are they even asking themselves what? Because you know, that's part of the character that you have to it has to be a legitimate thing that you're actually considering this crazy premise.
Right.
So how did that work for you two?
I'm not a member of the church. I never have been a member of the church. And so, yeah, there were some little terminology issues that I remember asking in the first rehearsals, like, president? Okay, who exactly is this I'm talking about? Just sort of cultural things that, although I understand, I haven't lived in. But, yeah, the biggest thing for me is that issue of the calling, is that issue of I do not understand the idea as as me, as the person, of going to a meeting with somebody in a tie and saying, you need to take another wife, and me going, okay, I'll do that. So getting myself to that place where it becomes this act of faith was sort of the biggest hurdle that I had to jump to find myself in the skin of Jacob, especially because that's sort of what he acts on. He doesn't have a personal revelation about this.
Yeah.
He just trusts other people's faith, like his wife's.
Well, Jacob is good. He's the good sort.
Yeah.
That's his characteristic. Which means what? He's reliable. He'll do the right thing.
He has a really early line, I just do what they ask me to. And that's pretty much what he does through the whole play for both the women, for his church, for whatever. He just does what people ask him to, and he finds happiness in making other people happy.
Yeah. Melissa, is this a character type you see at church? You know, the guys are just like, hey, you tell me, I'll do it.
Yes. I don't know that they get as much attention as men who are a little more, I don't know, in charge and look at me, I'm the man. But Jacob is, he's
the good soldier.
Sort.
Yeah,
the
good
soldier. He's the silent stalwart type. I've had crushes on Jacobs in the past.
April Fossen, tell us about your perception of Abigail, both from the things you had to sort of culturally figure out, but also your sense of her, this character.
Well, it wasn't – I didn't have the terminology issues that Mark had. I was raised LDS, so it was all familiar to me, and I know a lot of faithful LDS women, so that way of talking about personal revelation wasn't new to me at all. But for her, it's not – just about her faith. It is that, but it's also a gut reaction. She feels it in her, it's like an instinct, her reaction to the calling. And that is something that I can definitely relate to.
She says she's the broken one.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that to us. I mean, she can't have kids.
Right. She hasn't been able to have children. Miscarriages in vitro hasn't worked. They haven't been able to adopt. And I think that she has this sense that her brokenness is holding Jacob back from fulfilling what he is meant to do in this life and the next.
Which is, it's not enough for it just to be you and I. There has to be...
He should have children. He should be a father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Melissa, talk about that part too, this idea, because this seems like one of the themes in the, like, what is family? Which is such a big question these days.
It really is a very big question, and I think it's, I mean, before the calling comes, I think Jacob is actually quite comfortable saying, "We are a family. We're fine. We are us," and he repeats that in the show. And it's true though that Abigail feels like he should be, that there is something else that he is meant for, and she is potentially in the way of that. Infertility, I think, is one of those things that. I don't know that it's so much an issue in the church, but I do know women who suffer from it and feel very inadequate and feel it's just an incredibly difficult thing that I can't imagine. I don't have personal experience with it, but it's just it's a trial, and I think that she is looking for ways to compensate for what she feels are her inadequacies.
Yeah. Well, let's have you play this scene if you would. Jerry, do we need to set this up?
No, I think it's early in the play. They're trying to make sense of this crazy thing that has been asked of them.
Here's a scene. It's April and Mark Fossen. April plays Abigail. Mark plays Jacob in Melissa Leilani Larson's play, The Pilot Program.
I've always been good at assuming that someone somewhere is judging me.
When have I ever judged you?
You haven't. You don't. It's just my first thought. I can't help thinking that someone is judging me all of the time.
That's why you can't even sit in the same room with someone while they read something you've written.
Ugh, no. Can't stand it.
It's kind of adorable.
Don't start.
I know what I signed on for.
Do you, though? We're being asked to completely turn our lives upside down.
Could be worse.
Beth in Little Women?
I was thinking more along the lines of Job.
Right. Pestilence and boils.
You see? Worse.
What if it's a test to see what we'll say?
What for?
I don't know. To see what crazy things they can ask us to do before we stand up and say no. If Elder Holland stood up in General Conference and told you to go out and move Mount Timpanogos, would you? If it is a test, what happens next? Do we get a gold star for saying yes and then get sent on our merry way?
Elder Holland wouldn't actually do that.
5 years ago, I wouldn't have expected the area authority to call us to be part of a plural marriage.
Point taken.
God wants you to be a father. Who am I to stand in the way of that?
You're my wife.
3 miscarriages, no luck with in vitro or adoption. Maybe I'm the wrong wife.
You're being ridiculous. The things you're saying tonight are...
What? Should I count my blessings? Should I thrill at the fact that we've been asked to join, of all things, a pilot program?
The church has never been good at naming things. Look, I'll call President Fleet. I'll tell him no. We'll do it tonight.
Have I done something wrong?
God isn't refusing you children because you're a sinner.
Not a sinner, just a selfish, cynical, liberal workaholic.
Those are only sins right here, nowhere else. You're the most beautiful, cynical, liberal workaholic I've ever known. You're good, Abby. You are good.
You're the one they want, remember?
I wish you wouldn't. We're together. A package deal.
From the pilot program. It's the latest production of the Plan B Theater Company. So, Melissa Leilani Larson, why would they truly consider such a crazy question? Why would these guys say yes to that?
Why not? It's about what April was saying. I agree. It's about instinct. It's a blind leap. It's something I think she feels very strongly that something needs to change, and she's not sure how to do it. And then they get this call, and it feels so strange and inexplicable, and yet maybe it's the right thing.
I love how you point out that Abigail feels this blossom of warmth, which I think will be familiar to Mormons or people of faith. Like, this is the spirit or whatever it is saying, this is good, this is right. And it seems so counterintuitive that she would have this peaceful feeling for such a crazy premise.
She fights against it almost right away.
Yeah.
Because she, I think, knows what it means and doesn't want it to be that kind of a witness. She wants to say no. But sometimes what you want and what needs to happen don't align. And I think that's what happens here.
Well, it's interesting, Mark and April, that Abigail is disappointed that Jacob didn't immediately just say, what? No.
Yeah.
But Abigail didn't either.
Right. I think there's a part of her that's sort of hoping that he'll have a strong reaction, because then that would guide her reaction and help her to gauge whether what she's feeling is the spirit or her imagination. And when she finally reveals that she felt something, I think she's sort of surprised to find out that he didn't, because it's tangible and he didn't feel it.
Yeah. What does that say about Jacob, do you think?
We've been rehearsing this play or working on this play for I don't know how long. I've had the script for I don't know how long. If you had to pin me down and ask, like, what Jacob's opinion is, if he wants to do it or not, I don't know what the answer is. And it's okay, because I don't think that Jacob does either.
Yeah,
I think
that
he literally – it's just too big for him, and he is a person that he doesn't – he looks to others to make those decisions, and he trusts in others' faith and others' wisdom. And he is that good soldier, but he's not – like a special ops Marine who's going to make a decision on his own. He's going to be told where to go and what to do. And I kind of have grown to admire that about Jacob, that he is just willing to do whatever it takes to make everybody else happy.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, I don't know if he wants to do it or not. I don't think that he does.
Yeah. Well, that's what's so great about it. I mean, I think that, well, we'll talk a little bit more as this thing unfolds. It complicates things more, of course. That's Mark Fossen. He plays Jacob in the play. April Fossen also with us. She plays Abigail. Jerry Rapier is here. He directs the production of Pilot Program. Melissa Leilani Larson, of course, she wrote it. Pilot Program runs through this Sunday. There are still limited tickets available for Thursday evening and for performances on Saturday and Sunday. You can get the details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We need to take a quick break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are profiling the latest production from the Plan B Theater Company. It's called The Pilot Program. Well, we're talking about the concept's pretty straightforward. A faithful Mormon couple summoned to an interview with church officials who has a proposal. They say they want them to be part of a pilot program where they reinstate plural marriage. And then all the issues that ensue from that. And there are a lot, by the way. Melissa Leilani Larson is the playwright. She's joining us here. We also have Jerry Rapier, who is the who's Plan B Theater Company's producing director. He's directing pilot program. April Fossen plays Abigail. Mark Fossen is with us. He plays Abigail's husband, Jacob. And let me introduce also Susanna Florence Risser, who's making her Plan B Theater Company debut. She plays Heather. That's the other woman in the play. Susanna, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Melissa, introduce us to Heather first. I want to hear Susanna's take on her character. But Abigail gets to choose. It's kind of nice. I get to choose the wife of my husband. And she goes with it's kind of creepy in some ways. She goes with a former student of hers. Mm-hmm. But they're friendly. They're friends. They're kindred spirits.
I've worked as an instructor, both adjunct and as a lecturer, and I've had friendships come out of that. It is interesting, and maybe I don't know. Maybe theater is different than other fields, but you spend a lot of time with your students, and you get involved in their trajectory, and you find yourself. It's a little disconcerting to find yourself a mentor, but that's what's happened, and I've had really great friendships come out of teaching, and I think that's what happens here. Heather is a grad student under Abby's tutelage and learns a lot from her. And I think when the idea comes up that Abby's going to propose that Heather join them in this pilot program, the idea is a little bit that she sees aspects of herself when she was in grad school in Heather, almost like she sees an echo of herself. It's like, well, if we're going to bring in someone else, it would help a lot if she were like me as opposed to who knows.
Yeah, we like the same things. Susanna, tell us about your idea of Heather. She's strong. She's smart.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know Heather. I mean, I know many women like Heather who I admire her. I admire the way that she, you know, she talks a little bit about the process of accepting not being married and then deciding to just go ahead and live a full life and find what she's passionate about and pursue it. And I think that she continues to be, to have great integrity and follow that passion, that instinct throughout the play. And I admire that.
It's interesting, too, because she's gone away from Utah. Mm-hmm. In fact, not crazy about the idea of coming back to Salt Lake City because she's maybe she settled her life and who she is elsewhere?
Yeah. Yeah. I think she feels maybe a release from some of the cultural pressures of Mormonism as a single woman. And she lives in the Bay Area and has found probably a little bit more ability to kind of define herself in a different light.
Yeah. Melissa, there's an epigraph to the play from Margaret Atwood. You like Margaret Atwood. You made Heather like Margaret Atwood. What's that about?
Well, I just I think she has a very interesting way of looking at things, and her prose is beautiful. I just read her books and get lost in them.
It's also dystopian.
Yes, it is.
Weird stuff going on in the future.
The weird stuff. Well, gee, that I guess lines up with what we're doing. So, yes, I'm a fan of hers, and I admire her writing a lot. And it made sense, I think, to bring her in as someone that it was just interesting to thinking about her and her work, and it's that her tendency to set things in the future, and if Heather is already tapped into that, mm-hmm. it just kind of adds a nice layer.
So Jerry, set this scene up for us, if you would. This is Heather and Abigail and Jacob, and they've made the ask, which was weird and awkward. And again, lots of silences in that scene, I'm sure.
Beyond awkward.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
but there's something about it that makes sense to Heather. There's the similarity in how they hear it and how they approach it and how they both come to accept it. And so we're in this moment where Heather is fighting against it, but she's also trying to find her way through it.
Here it is, a scene from a pilot program. Let's see, April Fossen, of course, plays Abigail. We'll hear Mark Fossen again, who plays Jacob, and Susanna Florence Risser, she plays Heather.
How does this work, exactly? I was the kid on the playground who didn't want to take turns on the swings. I would run out of class first to claim mine, and then I wouldn't give it up all recess long until someone pulled me out of it. I suck at sharing.
I don't know. I guess that's what we have to figure out.
What do you mean you don't know?
I mean, I don't know.
You're asking me to... How can you not have a plan?
This is all new to me, too, all right? We all know what the ideal would be and that this is not it. I thought, what can I do to make this situation more tolerable?
And the answer was to call me.
I can't explain it, but yes.
Look, we know how crazy all this sounds. I don't know we've completely come to grips with it ourselves, but you're the closest thing she has to family. Her students are her children.
I used to wish you were my sister. I looked for excuses to visit you in your office almost every day. Coming here was like... Are you saying this is my only chance to get married?
Of course not.
I wanted it a long time ago when I was an undergrad and a fairy tale wedding was what everyone wanted. But finishing BYU single was liberating in a way. I didn't need to get married to be whole. I am me. I have a job. I support myself. I go to church on Sunday and think how blessed I am to be in complete control of my life, to only have to worry about what I want. Sometimes, though, there is that little nagging feeling that something, someone, is missing. I'll come home late from work and my apartment is dark and quiet. Most days I relish the quiet, but now and then I can't help think what those floors would sound like with more than one person walking across them. I sit on the couch and pull a blanket around myself and wish I could be held.
Honey.
It's nothing new. I'm fine. Marriage is not a part of my plan right now. It hasn't been for a while. I'm 33. So what? There's nothing wrong with being single at 33.
From the play, Pilot Program. So, Melissa, I know this is such a tiresome question, and you're so sick of it. But I tend to psychoanalyze sometimes, and I know I shouldn't. But this Heather seems like you on some level are certainly a powerful component of the way you're thinking about what it's like to be a single woman, as you said, in a culture of marriage, basically.
Yes. There are a lot of things that she and I have in common, and coming to the play, writing it, I knew that. Yeah, that's the role. If this were to happen, that's the role where I would fit. It's almost a little, some of that is a little too, that's a little too on the nose. Wow.
But what do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean?
You forget sometimes when you're writing things down, because you get emotional and you get in the moment and it just is on the page, and then you hear it and you're like, oh, that's me. Well, darn. That's a little too autobiographical right there.
Yeah. And in that sense, this is such a deeply personal character for you.
Yes, very much so. She's someone, I mean, I feel like I know all of them very well.
Yeah.
We're friends and we hang out. That's not creepy at all. I'm hanging out with imaginary people. But she's someone that I very much relate to and can find myself in that situation. And that's the angle from which I first approached the play. But then it ended up being just one of the angles.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the dating stuff, because that's weird, too. Super awkward, right, Jerry? I mean,
It's where a lot of the laughs come in the play. Yeah. Early on in the play, Jacob says, I'd at least like to have a conversation with her before I ask her to be my wife.
Yeah.
And then Heather actually breaks the tension at the end of just shortly thereafter after the scene when she reveals that she felt the same thing that Abby did. And she just asks, can we at least go to dinner or a movie or something? You know, can we date? And then they make a really nice statement at the beginning of the actual date that we see in the play that Heather and Jacob go on, that should we actually get to know each other without Abby filling in the blanks?
Right.
And that common ground that they start from frees them up to actually talk to each other. And Abby's still very present in that date, but it makes her less overbearing and just a part of it rather than the dominant presence. And it frees them up to be themselves a little bit. And we see them actually seeing each other as possible mates for the yeah. first time.
And that's when things start to turn, kind of. Because yeah. I think there's always this assumption, right, Melissa, that Abigail's figuring, all right, yeah, we can get on board with this, but of course he'll never have the same kinds of feelings to this person that he does for me.
Right. And that's where things get really complicated. And I don't think Jacob expects it either. And I think it's what's interesting to me about Heather coming in is that we have this established relationship, and Heather comes in and she meets this man and she's attracted to him and she just kind of follows that track. But the Abby and Jacob are dealing with the fact that they are a thing.
Yeah.
She doesn't realize, I don't think, that she is being a disruptive force, but she can't help it.
Here's another scene. This is between Jacob and Heather on this, I guess, date. And you start to see it begins awkward, of course, but then you start to see, as you guys mentioned, this kind of affinity. Another scene, another moment from the play pilot program.
Tell me about you. You and Abby.
It's always been about Abby.
And?
She didn't drive before we moved west. She grew up on the East Coast. You know that. No need for a car. It was different in the Midwest, where the buses were infrequent and stopped running after 10. I taught her how to drive late at night in the Hampshire parking lot. Had my dad's old Audi at the time, a 5-speed that constantly smelled of gas. But man, it handled great. I used to rip up the canyon in that bad boy like...
Like?
It doesn't matter.
Of course it does.
It's just, driving is one of the few things I do by myself. Abby gets motion sickness. She's never been physically strong. You know, she pretty much hates driving. That's probably the real reason she never got her license until she had to.
I love long drives.
That Audi looked like a mess, but felt like a coupe. It just hugged the road, you know. I forget how fast I was going. I got pulled over more than once.
How fast were you going?
Got caught going 106 once. This was years later. It was late on a Sunday night and the freeway was practically empty. It was a $400 ticket.
Oh.
Yeah. That was not a good night. Abby had her third miscarriage that day. She was the most despondent I'd ever seen her. No, she wasn't even despondent. She was still utterly quiet. She wouldn't talk to me, and it was like I couldn't win her back from wherever she was. We came home from the hospital, and she just went to bed. I couldn't sleep. I was all nerves and raw anger, so I went speeding down I-15 like I was playing Mario Kart. I think that cop pulling me over probably saved my life.
Because he stopped you.
Something like that. Anyways, I have distinct memories of trying to talk grad school Abby through shifting gears. You couldn't really talk grad school Abby into much of anything. And the Audi could chunk a chunk a chunk a chunk a chunking across the parking lot. She was learning it, but more slowly than she liked, and she got frustrated. I borrowed my roommate's Prism to teach her after that automatic everything.
We could go for a drive sometime.
So interesting, Melissa, because... April, I want to hear you on this because Abigail says, the night I knew it would work and I didn't want it to.
Yeah. I think it's sort of been theoretical yeah. up until this point. And then when she actually sees that they have a connection, she starts understanding that it is, in a way, a threat to her relationships with both of them.
Yeah.
And that is... terrifying.
There's a scene, a monologue, a soliloquy that I want to have April read. This is Abby. Jerry and Melissa, I want to have you talk a little bit about it, though. The imagery is this faucet, and we were talking off the air, and you said it's interesting how people react to it.
Yeah, I think audiences have responded differently. Sometimes there's a little bit of a laugh of recognition that comes with it, because what Mel has beautifully captured is this idea: when you're stuck in your thoughts and you fixate on something in the room with you, and it somehow this image that seems to have nothing to do with what you're experiencing suddenly becomes the metaphor for exactly what you're experiencing. And I think that's just – Mel has beautifully brought that to life in this monologue for where Abby is at this moment in her life that seems to be swirling around her.
Yeah, when did that come to you, this scene?
Standing in my parents' kitchen, staring at the faucet.
is that right?
Yeah.
I love it.
I thought that was really pretty. I'm going to go write that down. It's funny. I find myself really, I guess, enamored of ordinary things when everything outside is so crazy. Mm. I mean, the past couple weeks have been very busy for me. A lot of things have been happening. I've been so excited about the show and the film. And sometimes you just kind of have to go, oh, I have to get gas in my car. I need to do – there are things, you know. You have a checklist of what you have to do that's just ordinary. And yeah. The ordinary, there's a little bit of an escape in it. And it's – and I think that's where Abby finds a little bit of a release after something so – it ends up being devastating. But in the moment, it's just so huge.
Here's April Fossen, plays Abigail in the play Pilot Program.
That night, I realized the kitchen faucet was dripping. Subtly. Slowly. I think I only noticed it because I happened to be staring at it. Over the course of about 15 seconds, a thin lunette of water would form along the inside edge of the spout, steadily thickening, rounding until its weight was too much and it fell with a nearly imperceptible plop against the steel basin. I imagine if the faucet were sentient, if it were struggling to hold each droplet back, straining with all its might, almost managing to haul that burden, that single glimmering bead, back where it belongs. But the water is a force. It wants to move. It wants to go, and there is no holding it. Suddenly, it's gone. Dashed and invisible, another ready to take its place. I was mesmerized. I leaned against the granite countertop and watched drop after drop. I reached out to catch a drop with a finger, raising my hand so that it ran down my arm to my elbow, a tiny shiver of cold. A matching shiver went down my spine. Father, is this thy plan? There was no answer. Not in that moment. Nothing but the memory of a blossom of warmth in my heart and a sparkle of cold on my fingertips. I wiped my hand on a towel and left the kitchen. I probably should have taken a notebook and a pen upstairs, but I took a collection of Alice Munro's short fiction instead and went to bed.
It's interesting. This is a prayer. She doesn't know what to do. She's caught in this situation. She hadn't anticipated that it was going to go this way necessarily. And there's another underlying theme, Melissa, I wanted to ask you about, and that idea, this very real image of damaged goods comes up in the play. And Abigail says, you know, we come to this earth to be imperfect, to be mortal and to be malleable and to be human, which is interesting when you think about it. That runs counter to a Mormon concept of trying to be perfect.
I think where I find my personal solace in the gospel is that it is through being imperfect that we are perfect. I think the idea of striving for perfection is a cultural one and not necessarily built into the gospel itself. I think that we have a tendency to set too high of expectations, and then you can't help but be disappointed. I joke about it sometimes, and I say, you know, if friends are coming to a show, I say, well, it's gonna be bad. You're gonna hate it. Lower your expectations so that there's nowhere to go but up. I think that's a personal standard I set for myself. So it's like, because if the bar is too high, I mean, you're looking up at it going, yeah, I can't do that. And I personally don't see sense in living life that way, because you're never going to, if all you're doing is looking up, you're never going to get there.
Susanna, what do you make of that idea as an actively Mormon woman mm-hmm. in this play that's working through these same kinds of questions? I wondered what you thought about this idea of perfection and imperfection.
Well, in my mind, the idea that we need to be perfect is not it sort of removes the central aspect of the gospel of the church, which is around Jesus Christ. And I think that we talk about his atonement, but where is his atonement if we have to be perfect without it? So in my mind, the imperfection is inherent in all of us, and it's necessary to embrace it, accept it, and love it, you know? And I think that that is I think that Mel captures that beautifully, and I think that her characters, we find the suffering and the anguish because her characters have integrity. They follow what they believe and know to be true, and they do accept those imperfections in themselves. And I think that is central to, you know, what I find in my own faith.
You know, one of the things that I wondered about was that it in some ways, as Heather seems to kind of eclipse Abigail in that relationship, it's like Abigail is transformed into a single woman again. Is that fair as an impression?
I think that's a fair interpretation. I think that there's this early on that she talks about between the three of them, including Jacob, that they're taking turns being the third wheel in this situation. Yeah. I mean, it's so hard in a triangle to where's the center? I mean, everyone just kind of, you can't help but take turns. And I think that she finds herself single. It's this very strange, she talks about Jacob being down the hall, and yet he's not that far, and yet he is completely distant. And it's, everything is different, and you can't go back to the way things were before. So I think it's actually, I hadn't thought about it before, but I do actually relate to Abby in that context as well.
Yeah, April, I mean, she's sort of back to where she's, you know, and she has to find her own happiness outside of a relationship almost.
Right. But she's gained a child. And yeah. That's, I think, the big difference for her is that she's lost, at least temporarily, lost the kind of relationship she had with her husband and with her friend, but she's gained a child.
April Fossen, she plays Abigail. Mark Fossen with us, he plays Jacob. Susanna Florence Risser plays Heather. In the latest production from Plan B Theater Company, it's called Pilot Program. Jerry Rapier directs the production. Jerry, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Melissa Leilani Larson wrote the play. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And April, Mark, Susanna, thank you all very much.
Thanks.
Pilot Program runs through this Sunday. There are still limited tickets available for Thursday evening and for the performances on Saturday and Sunday. To get the particulars, go to our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.